Hey guys, and welcome to your week in review. And tonight we're going to discuss everything happening this week in WWE, including did the Mysterio family turn heel on SmackDown? Kevin Owens coming back with a vengeance. The Fiend targets Randy Orton, and Roman Reigns continues to evolve into a magnificent heel character. All that, and of course, much more right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
All right, everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast for this Sunday night, November 29th, 2020. And we've got about, what, a month left of 2020? I don't think anyone's going to complain about that, as this has certainly been a challenging year, but a really fun year for wrestling considering the fact that there's no fans. And we're going to get into this week in WWE, a little bit tilted to SmackDown, yes, because we have a full Monday Night Raw review, but certainly going to touch on the big ticket items in a kind of a different perspective than we did for the full Monday Night Raw review. But there's definitely things on SmackDown that I want to discuss, and a lot of good things at that. I mean, I've been on a bit of a positive spin with the product as of late, particularly last Monday Night Raw. I opened the show with, I think it was like 20, 30 minutes of just positivity, and I will definitely be trying to strive for that as well for SmackDown, because while there were some things that were just bizarre, right, like the Mysterio family ganging up on King Corbin for no reason and acting like a completely heel group, and that made no sense to me. Yeah, and we'll get to that. But the Kevin Owens deal, I thought was great. Roman Reigns is continuing to be great. He has not had an off night yet. He has not had a single night where I'm like, ugh, that didn't work. I haven't cringed once. He just feels like he's being him, which is what we've known all along, and that Vince McMahon was just absolutely just adamant and resistant that Roman would thrive more in this position than in the face position. I mean, I think it's there really is no other person, I think, that would have made the case that Roman's a better babyface at this point. So we're going to get to all of the good and, yes, bad things that happen on SmackDown. But I do want to talk quickly about a couple of things. Number one, the show that Anthony DeMarco did on Matt Hardy versus Edge, the WWE Rivalries episode that he did this past week, was, as always, very well done, number one. Number two, if you are new to the product, or you want to revisit something as a veteran fan, something that made you feel emotion, actually was, it really blurred the lines between reality and fiction, this is a story that you should dig into. And that's what actually Anthony digs into too, is, and he commented that this is to kind of the tail end of the wrestling era that made you believe something could be real. And I know I believed it. I believe Anthony said he was 11 years old when he watched it, when this angle unfolded. I was 20, so, and I still believed it at 20, so I don't know if that speaks more on WWE's brilliance in storytelling, or it speaks to my just lack of intelligence, so maybe a little of both. At 20, I mean, God knows at 20 years old what the hell I was doing, which is, say, for another podcast at another time, but I think that when you can blur the lines, which WWE almost never does today, that you create emotion. You create a story that's compelling. You know, not every story has to blur the lines. That's not my point. But when you have stories that do, and it's based in truth, then certainly you have the recipe for an engaging, compelling, and money-drawing story in the palm of your hands if you're able to execute correctly. And I think for the most part, Matt Hardy versus Edge is a story that WWE executed pretty well. So if you want the full review on that and what exactly led up to the Matt Hardy versus Edge, if you're thinking, well, what are you talking about based in reality? What is this? What happened? Well, I'll let Anthony DeMarco take that baton and run with it because he does a great job of explaining it. So I'd recommend you go check it out. It's on our feed and was posted on Friday. Speaking of shows, if you've noticed, we've certainly posted a hell of a lot of shows over the last few days, right? We've posted the rivalries. We've got the New Japan Pro Wrestling show that if you are not a fan, maybe you'll become a fan. I would really recommend you listen to Zach Downing. Very, very good. Certainly a very listenable podcast, a very intelligent and passionate guy. Kind of all fits into what we're looking for here. And we also have Michael Ritter, who did SmackDown, a complete SmackDown review, and gave his top five individuals that we could see a big push in for in 2021. So, very interesting list and a great SmackDown review, as well as, don't forget, we had Mimi Burris, who had her first show here in the WWE podcast, where she discussed the highs and lows of the week, and I got great feedback already, and I certainly enjoyed the show as well. It's, I mean, she feels like she's been here for months, years. I mean, she just kind of like slid right in perfectly, and it's been great. And I hope that you guys enjoy her too. It's also a good thing to have a female voice on the show. I think that definitely breaks up all of us guys being nerds about wrestling and you know, throwing a female every once in a while. I definitely think that's good for listenership. And it's cool to hear girls talk about wrestling. Because let's be honest, we don't hear about it a lot. You know, it's not something that we hear women, not necessarily girls, but women, talk about. It seems to be kind of on the DL. So certainly it's great to hear an outspoken female, intelligent, as always, just very well spoken. And check it out. It's the highs and lows of the week that'll be dropping Saturday night, Sunday morning-ish, every single week. And, of course, don't forget Zach Smith covering NXT. And he did, as always, a great job covering NXT in what was a very eventful NXT with the Toni Storm heel turn, among other things. So check it out, guys. We've got a full lineup. We've got a great cast of members here on the team that cover all angles of wrestling for you. And myself covers about three shows a week, so the rest of the shows are up to our team here that does a great job in covering wrestling. So, again, I'm also going to be doing live shows when needed, and I may continue the Wednesday format. We'll see how that goes. Again, if I don't get callers, I just kind of shut the show down because it's for you guys. I'm still going to do the voicemail bag. So if, by the way, you want to call in, the number is still valid. Right? That number, if you want to call us and leave a voicemail, you got 3 minutes. 518-952-0247. So definitely feel free. Talk about wrestling, anything coming up. I know that Black Friday and all that kind of thing has thrown a wrench into our plans and are certainly sitting probably at home and shopping on Amazon like myself, or trying to find a PlayStation 5, which is like, you know, trying to find a needle in a haystack. It's pretty much impossible right now. So, okay, guys, week in review. What happened this week? Well, let's start out with some positivity, because I'm on a positivity ride right now. I don't know if the New Day have somehow injected their power of positivity all the way from Orlando, Florida, which is, I guess, where they're kind of stationed, where all the towns seem to be stationed right now, into all the way in upstate New York here. But whatever the case may be, I will say I'm really loving, or at least for now, what they've done with Kevin Owens and Jey Uso and Roman Reigns. Right now, Roman Reigns and Jey Uso are just doing such a great job. And it's a testament to them that when I say they're doing a great job, that doesn't mean I'd go to a live event, whenever the heck, you know, those happen, of course, and cheer them because they're cool heels doing a great job. That's not what I mean. And in today's, you know, heel vision or heel personas, you have a lot of heels that are great at their job. They're so great that they're cool, which makes them, guess what, not a heel. So when you get these true heels that come along, which we've all believed that Roman could be just as good as this for many years, and it's here, and he's not a guy you cheer for because he's doing a great job as a heel. He's a guy that you genuinely dislike. So that's the biggest compliment I could give Roman Reigns and Jey Uso at this time, because Jey Uso is also just a great, I hate to say sidekick, he's a great second in that team of Roman Reigns, Paul Heyman, obviously, and Jey Uso. He's being brainwashed, and everyone sees it, and Jey Uso is just so desperate to stay in the family and doesn't want to be blackballed or banished that he's willing to do anything. Willing to do anything for Roman, who will never be satisfied, no matter what decision Jey Uso chooses. Roman Reigns will forever be annoyed by Jey Uso. He didn't do it right. He didn't do it when he should have known he should have done it. He did it when Roman told him not to do it. You know, all of these things that no matter what Jey does, nothing's ever good enough. It's great. It's great storytelling. It's great TV. Wonderful TV. And Jey Uso has become a bigger star in a month and a half than his first 8 years or however, 9 years, whatever the heck it's been since he's come to WWE with his brother as the Usos. I mean, it is certainly it's one of the best things that ever happened to Jey Uso's career and Roman Reigns. So now you interject Kevin Owens, and he's moved on from, I mean, Drew McIntyre, which was kind of a flash in the pan, but we will revisit that, I'm sure, later. That was just kind of an appetizer for the main event that may or may not come our way WrestleMania time. But we have Kevin Owens coming in now as the next contender for Roman Reigns. And Kevin Owens, a guy that has been practically irrelevant since April. Think about that. This guy has been irrelevant for nearly 9 months. After WrestleMania, he beat Seth Rollins. He injured himself, right? He was gone for a little while. He comes back, and he's kind of on the Kevin Owens show. Gets in a skirmish with Seth Rollins again, and that kind of goes away. He kind of pops up here and there, does the Kevin Owens show, comes back. He's been almost doing nothing for 9 months. And now he's finally gotten himself into a program he can sink his teeth into. Kevin Owens has gotten his teeth into a program that may be the best program he's been in a very long time. And I know it's only been a week or two. I understand that. But what I'm seeing so far, it's got a lot of potential. Because this is the first time that Roman Reigns has been purposefully disrespected. You know, everything that has happened that Roman Reigns has gotten annoyed about have been inadvertent disrespect. And look what he's done. So imagine what he's going to do when somebody purposefully disrespects him and his family. That is intriguing as hell. And what Kevin Owens did to Jey Uso, who was trying to make a statement or send a message that WWE loves to say, the tables got turned. He got hit with a stunner after the match because Jey Uso got intentionally disqualified in the main event. And Kevin Owens wails on him with a chair and then ends it with another stunner. I mean, it was Stone Cold stuff. I mean, that's how Stone Cold would end a show. Kevin Owens was antagonizing Roman Reigns, saying, "Where are you?" Saying, "This is what I think of your family." And the look backstage with Roman Reigns looking at the monitor, with Paul Heyman looking at Roman Reigns, that was really good stuff. Because Roman Reigns was able to tell you, without saying a thing, or Paul Heyman saying a thing, of what is going through his mind. And that is, destroy this man. Show him some respect. He disrespected you. He disrespected our family, our bloodline. You're going to let a guy like that? I mean, you can feel it. You can see it. He was seething. and he didn't answer the call when Kevin Owens called him out. That's the difference between the babyface, one of the differences between the babyface Roman and the heel Roman, which is infinitely better. So Kevin Owens intentionally pokes the bear in a big way. Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns are going to have, I think, a great verbal exchange. I'm interested to see what Kevin Owens says. I'm sure that next week on SmackDown, Roman Reigns will get his hands on Kevin Owens, maybe make him pay in to some degree. And this is leading to a match at TLC. There's no question about that. I mean, it's just he's his next opponent, and that's fine. I think it's great for Kevin Owens. It's great to see him in something that isn't irrelevant. And I'm looking forward to that match. The downside of that is I think we all can see the end game for this particular program, right? I think we all know where this is ending. And that is with a spear, with a battered Kevin Owens on his back, taking the pinfall for Roman Reigns. So that is the downside, because I don't believe for a second that Kevin Owens, unless something massive has changed in the internal feeling about Kevin Owens, that he is going to be the guy to dethrone Roman Reigns. After Drew McIntyre, the guy that you've built up for the last 8 to 9 months, after beating Brock Lesnar at Mania, which is insane that it's been almost 9 months, right? Isn't that just crazy? The WrestleMania that's too big for one night, remember that? And the Blinded by the Lights. Remember that song will forever remind me of the pandemic. I mean, that just does. And WrestleMania, the weirdest WrestleMania of all time. So they're not going to have Drew McIntyre not be able to defeat Roman Reigns, but have Kevin Owens be able to do it, considering where these two have been and the foundation that WWE has laid for both. You don't see Kevin Owens being able to flat out beat Roman Reigns. So here's the positive to that, though, I guess, as I debate myself live here, is that you have Kevin Owens in an elevated position coming out of this. So while anybody who has been watching wrestling for any period of time knows that look, Kevin Owens probably isn't going to win, it's the long game with Kevin, right? Like, who is he going to face after this that actually has a chance of him winning? Like, what is this setting Kevin Owens up for? Because we all know what Roman Reigns is being set up for. It's to be the guy. It's to go to the next obstacle to overcome it. Right? And Kevin Owens is just that next baby face up in line that he hasn't faced in a while. And he's going to leave eventually Kevin Owens flat on his back. But Kevin Owens to me is more interesting because Roman's already a made man. Kevin Owens is floundering. And he has not been in a main event situation in a very long time. Very, very long time. Seth Rollins wasn't a main event at WrestleMania. It wasn't the main event. To me, there's one main event, period. But the point is, I want to know what the plan is for Kevin Owens after this. Because if he goes back into obscurity and starts doing KO shows and random things again and just kind of being a backstage figure every once in a while that pops in and out, I'm not really looking forward to that. So I'm more scared for after this, what this is going to do to Kevin Owens' career. So, okay. Well, I spent, my gosh, like 15 minutes on Kevin Owens, Roman Reigns, but I loved it. So you want something positive? There you go. Another positive, while we keep on this train, Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn is a guy that you really could put the championship on, the big championship, the Universal Championship, the WWE Championship, and this guy could carry the company. I truly believe that because he talks people into buildings. He's got that ability. I mean, figuratively, of course, at this point. But he has the ability to talk you into wanting to see a match that he's participating in. That's not easy to do. And you know WWE values his promo ability too, his mic skills, because they put him in multiple talking segments every single SmackDown, which I appreciate. And giving him the nickname, or whoever came up with it, maybe Sami Zayn himself, of the master strategist, I think that's what they called it. And he's a conspiracy theorist. Everything's a conspiracy. I love that. That makes me laugh. I know that he's a heel. It's not supposed to make me laugh, but it does. It makes me laugh. Now, does Sami Zayn have true heat? No. Sami Zayn doesn't have Roman Reigns heat. See, that's the difference. That's the difference between a heel that has true hatred and heat and an individual, a wrestler, a performer that is booked as a heel, but yet you still look at it as kind of cool and, you know, occasionally makes you laugh. So that's the difference. But at the same time, I love Sami Zayn. He's entertaining as hell. And when I go and cheer for him, probably not cheer for him, but I wouldn't actively boo him either. So that therein lies the issue. Therein lies the conflicting emotions that I think a lot of fans have for Sami Zayn, because he's got like an inherently likable quality about him too. And I can't put my finger on it. So, he's hilarious. He's hilarious, and it's hard to make him truly hated. But I do believe that you could put the weight of the company on his shoulders. I know that's a big statement to make, but I really believe that. And he's also got a really good point about Daniel Bryan and how that if Daniel Bryan, that, you know, per Daniel Bryan's statement a month or half ago, whatever it was, that if he became Intercontinental Champion, that he would come out and defend it every single week. And Sami Zayn said that that's a stupid idea. Why would you do that? And I agree. I agree. I don't know what it is about this incessant need for WWE to be transparently about babyface champions constantly okay with defending their championship. And look, I've ranted about this many times if you've listened to me. But it's true. Daniel Bryan would look like a fool if you'd come out there every week and defend the Intercontinental Championship. Now, I know John Cena did it with the United States Championship, and it lended itself to be one of the more entertaining segments and segments I look forward to the most every single Monday night when he held the U.S. title. I loved it. But as a rule of thumb, I am not a fan of constant championship matches, particularly from babyfaces, that Vince feels the more important point to get across to fans is that you're a fighting champion. You're not backing down from a fight. You'll defend this anywhere. Again, that makes you look like a fool, that you're giving away an opportunity that anyone can get anytime they want because they just ask for it. Well, that's not how life works, number one. Number two, you're there to fight for championships. You've presumably fought and scratched and clawed and bled and sweat and cried to get to where you're at. And you're going to just reward anyone that asks because, well, I'm a babyface. Gosh darn it, I'm supposed to defend this championship anytime. It looks stupid. It looks foolish on the babyface's part. And furthermore, the championship itself is devalued because you're giving away something more, which makes it worth less. Pretty damn simple. But WWE, don't tell them that. To them, every babyface needs to be a fighting champion. Anytime anybody asks, they'll just give it away even if they say no, like Asuka did to Lana on Raw. I mean, Lana literally said, like, I don't want a championship match. And Asuka's like, hey, no, you're getting one. It's ridiculous. I mean, they're like, the babyfaces are forcing championship matches. Like, they want to defend it so bad that they will, even when the opponent says, I don't know, they're like, nope, we're doing it. It's so ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Oh, Lord. I mean, okay, well, I'm gonna keep moving on here. So Sami Zayn, I love. Sami Zayn is an absolute highlight. I look forward to him every single week so much on SmackDown. So that's a huge, huge positive. Big fan. Big E this week was backstage kind of giggling and laughing, though, with Apollo Crews. And he cut a halfway decent promo on Sami Zayn, who interrupted, and shook his hand and then counted to 10 as Sami Zayn was writhing in pain from Big E's grip on his hand. But the reason Big E did that was to mimic the 10 counts that Sami Zayn has been getting in order to just claim a victory in a championship match. The other point, though, is Big E, if you noticed, was not in his silly rainbow attire that the New Day would typically wear. So that's a positive, and maybe, maybe a step in the right direction. If you remember, I said that Big E, I do not expect a 180 turn immediately. I expect, as long as I see a slow progression week after week, we start to see a little progress, a little progress, a little progress. That's what I'm looking for. Not a sudden flip to this dark, mean character that is cutting much different sounding promos. That's not what I'm looking for right off the bat. And honestly, it wouldn't be something that would make sense. So for me, Big E is a guy that I need to see progression from and a direction for, not just this guy that comes backstage, makes jokes, you know, pretends that he's still in the New Day and that Kofi and Xavier are still there, right? That's the most important thing. And I, you know, maybe it was just an anomaly this week and he just wasn't in his ring gear because he didn't have a true match. But nonetheless, it was something small that I noticed that hopefully they continue to work on. So the other thing on SmackDown, let's see what other big things happened here. We got, Bianca Belair defeating Natalya. And don't worry, folks, we got our first roll-up of the night. So the roll-up lives on as a finish here. And I don't even honestly know why a roll-up was done. Because Natalya is so defined down by WWE that would a clean loss to Bianca Belair really have hurt Natalya that much? No. The answer is no. There's a correct answer here. The answer is no. Natalya would not have been damaged whatsoever if she lost clean to Bianca Belair. And furthermore, I think you took a little bit of the credibility away from Bianca Belair by not allowing her to go over clean on Natalya. So not only is WWE maybe trying to protect Natalya, which is really unneeded, but also they took a little bit of the importance and the emphasis off of the victory over Natalya from Bianca Belair away. So nonetheless, it was a good match. I mean, it kind of was exactly what you'd expect. And it was a very much just a win for Bianca, who was the only person that could have won that match. I mean, Natalya is a veteran. The only thing she's got going for her is her family name and her tenure. That's it. And I don't mean disrespect to Natalya, even though it sounds like I just disrespected her. But let's look at the facts. The facts are that she is a two-time women's champion. One of those was the prestigious, extremely prestigious Divas Championship. Y'all remember the Butterfly Championship? Yep. If you can't sense the sarcasm, sense it right now. But she also did hold the SmackDown Women's Championship. So she is a two-time women's champion, albeit really a one-time because the Divas Championship, sorry, doesn't count. That was in an era that women weren't really even taken seriously. So I don't take the belt seriously, and therefore she's a one-time women's champion. So there's that. So she was SmackDown Women's Champion once. She doesn't cut particularly good promos. She has cut good to very good promos at times where she feels it in her guts and she doesn't sound like she's scripted and she's coming off some place of real emotion. She has shown signs of that over her career. But in general, she's backstage with her stupid cat ears on that are, I mean, I don't understand the point of that. Okay, you like cats. I mean, do you have cats? Or do you wish you were a cat? I mean, I don't know her obsession with it. I know she's on Instagram posting pictures of her cats a lot. So maybe she's worried about her cats watching TV and they want to. I mean, I don't know. I don't get it. And to me, it looks silly as a grown woman who's probably nearly 40 years old going out there with cat ears on. So that doesn't help her case, right? Then you have her body of work, which speaks for itself. She is a tough woman. She has lasted in WWE for quite some time. I mean, she has been in WWE for many years, since really 2008, as I'm looking kind of through her history with the alliance with Victoria. She was with the Hart Dynasty in like 2009, 2010, the Divas of Doom. So she and was a part of the women's evolution, revolution. I just, when you look at Natalya, nobody is looking at her going, oh man, I can't wait till they build around her. Like, WWE's had her for 12 years. And you would think that they know what their asset is after 12 years. So, Natalya, for those out there, I know I went on a big Natalya tangent, but I don't talk about her a lot because she's often an afterthought. Based, again, no, don't disrespect. This is WWE creative. This is what I see on my TV screen, not backstage. I see this on my TV screen. So this is the information I'm going off of. But again, I just don't see her ever being somebody that they build around. And therefore, I don't know why they couldn't have just given the win clean with no funky roll-up, which really implies a lucky victory to an up-and-coming star like Bianca Belair. So, boy, I talked about that match way more than I thought I would. Okay. Then we get to Murphy defeating King Corbin. Now, let me set the stage here. First of all, King Corbin was supposed to face Otis in a match that night, but Jey Uso came out and ended up beating the holy hell out of Otis with a steel chair. And it was because after the beginning of SmackDown with Roman and Jey in the middle of the ring, where Roman was basically saying, they don't respect you because they don't fear you. And Jey took that as I need to beat the hell out of somebody. I need to instill fear. He just beat Otis because Otis was coming out for his match as Jey was going up the ramp and the segment was ending. And then he came back and beat the holy hell out of Otis. Now, let me say this. As much as talked about that I love Jey Uso and Roman Reigns as heels, and they've done a great job and have legitimate heat, especially Roman, more Roman than Jey, who we kind of feel sympathy for, I was loving seeing Otis get his ass handed to him. It was awesome. I don't know why I loved it so much. Maybe because I despise what WWE Vince has done with the Otis character. It's probably why. So, I just absolutely loved what Jey Uso did. I mean, just whip him from limb to limb with that chair. It made me smile. It made me happy. And it wasn't supposed to do that, but it did. So let me just say that first and foremost. Second of all, King Corbin then ends up in a match with Murphy. And I don't know. Number one, I don't really understand why they're fighting other than King Corbin came up to them as a family and started disrespecting them, I guess, and walked away. And by God, did he look tall against, you know, standing side by side from all of them. And he looked like he was 8 feet tall and they were all 5'2". I don't know why. The camera angle, whatever it was. But we had King Corbin in this match, really a 4-on-1 scenario. And this is where I just don't get it. Now, you could chalk it up to, well, they disrespected the backstage. Well, you can't tell me that that's how the Mysterio family deals with something like this. They don't. And by the way, Rey Mysterio's eye is magically back, if you didn't notice that, from the eye versus an eye match that Vince probably said, it's been enough time. Fans have forgot. The program's over. Take your patch off and reveal no damage. there's that. But we also got a Mysterio family that really was heel during this match, acting as complete heels, interfering, pulling his feet, distracting him just so Murphy could get the victory. So we got a Murphy victory that was tainted in Rey Mysterio's family's fingerprints. And I didn't like it. I just didn't understand it. This is the opposite of how you book a babyface. The heel was outnumbered, and the babyface family were using all heel tactics to beat Corbin. It was just silly, and I didn't understand it. Anybody else get it? But King Corbin said, next week I challenge Murphy again, and this time he said he's going to be prepared. Well, why wouldn't he have just said, next week I challenge you and, you know, your family's banned from ringside? Do you accept? I mean, they're there, right? That kind of evens the odds. I don't know why. What he means by being prepared. Does he get to carry brass knucks? Does he have backup? An inanimate object? I don't know, but he could have just said, leave your familia backstage. End of story. So we'll have to see. I mean, I'm not particularly interested in this. I'm actually not interested in anything the Mysterios are doing at all. I want Murphy to just kind of break away from them. He's getting poisoned by this cancer of a Mysterio family. And again, I don't mean in real life when I say the cancer of the Mysterio family. I know there's a lot of people out there love the Mysterios. I do too. I love Rey Mysterio. It's kind of where it ends for me. But this storyline with Seth Rollins really went on, you know, three times as long as it should have. And Murphy's kind of the residual element that's left from it. He's kind of the remaining connecting element to the storyline. And I think it's hurting Murphy a bit to be hanging out with a 19-year-old girl on TV. And the fact that none of them can act. Like, even Rey Mysterio's never been good at acting, and he's been in wrestling for, like, 25 years. The family cannot act. And it starts, again, Rey Mysterio, Dominic is terrible. Then you get to Aaliyah and his wife, which are, I mean, you talk about community theater amateur hour. It is just terrible with their acting. Rey needs to stop bringing his family. Why is he bringing his family around for every match now? There's no need for it. Alrighty. Moving on here. We got Murphy beating King Corbin, of course. But that pretty much wraps up SmackDown. Yes, we also got the Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode versus the Street Profits. Nice the Street Profits have someone really good to work with. But, yeah, we got the good old roll-up on the champions here to put themselves in a championship picture. So we got Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler defeating the Street Profits so that they have to defend their SmackDown Tag Team Championships against them in the near future, which, again, will be at TLC. I mean, so that is that's really SmackDown. Again, I thought overall it was really good, really good. Monday Night Raw, again, you guys heard me talk about it this past week on my Raw review. And I thought that the focus here was really The Fiend and Randy Orton. Of course, Alexa in her brilliance, which I've went over many times. But The Fiend and Randy Orton is a duo that makes perfect sense that they're together. And Bray Wyatt over the coming weeks will do a great job of telling us why. Yes, we saw images of the burning cabin in the woods, which we all know, or some of us remember that was Sister Abigail and her ashes were burned. Which doesn't make sense, right? Because if ashes were there, then she was already burned, but nonetheless. So that is what it's representing is, or why Bray Wyatt would want vengeance on Randy Orton is because of that. And the program they had back in, 4 years ago? At WrestleMania 33, I was there. So that storyline is really where it led to, with Randy Orton in the ring. And there were, if you guys remember, Bray Wyatt was able to, make pictures of bugs appear on the mat. As if that's supposed to be some kind of advantage. I mean, I don't understand that part of that. I'm not going to get into that match, but if you don't know what I'm talking about, go watch Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton WrestleMania 33. I'll leave it at that. You'll shake your head and go, so what? Randy Orton's scared of a little, basically a PowerPoint presentation on the wrestling mat. You'll see. But at least it makes sense. The Fiend is on a tear for vengeance. He's attacking those that have done him wrong. Randy Orton in the past has done him wrong. Makes sense that he's going after Randy Orton. I like the consistency. The question will become, does Randy Orton change? Or if he does, how does he change? Because Randy's already heel. How does Randy Orton change? Does he change his hair? Does he change his look? Does he not change at all? So there's something to look out for in this story. Presumably, they're probably going to go a month or two, maybe end at the Rumble or beforehand. But I think that they've done a nice job here teasing it. And I have problems with how they're going to finish this program because you have Randy Orton, who you've built up for so long as this monster heel. And same thing for Bray Wyatt, kind of in the tweener zone. So, presumably Bray Wyatt's going to win, and Randy Orton is going to take the pinfall, or at least the pass out from the claw, the mandible claw. But I don't know the finish of this match. Depends on the stipulation at TLC, which is, I'm assuming, where they'll first meet. So, that was really the big talking point, and the triple threat that is coming this Monday night. So, tomorrow night, we have Riddle, Keith Lee, and AJ Styles in a triple threat to determine who is going to face Drew McIntyre for the WWE Championship, presumably at TLC. If you're looking for a prediction, AJ Styles wins that match. Why? Well, you have Riddle, who is should be nowhere near a championship opportunity. And you guys know what I think about Riddle. I know some of you love his kind of cool, too cool for school, pothead type of personality of like, whatever, man. Like, I'm just going to go out here and I'm gonna ride some waves. Like, that's what I feel like he's going to tell me. I cannot stand it. In the ring, he's magnificent. But, I mean, I went on a rant about that on Monday night. But Riddle should be nowhere near it. And Keith Lee should be nowhere near this championship. So, to me, this is an AJ Styles special. And the wild card is going to be his associate. You know, how does he get involved? What is the stare down going to look like between McIntyre and him? I can't remember his name. Jordan? I think Jordan is his first name. Forgive me if I'm wrong. But that is what I think is, because yes, we've seen AJ Styles, Drew McIntyre before, but we haven't seen it for the championship, and the wild card is out there that hasn't been there before. So there's a new wrinkle here. I think they could tell a good story, and AJ Styles, I think, needs it more than anybody. I do, because AJ Styles is a guy that I feel like he's not being maximized to his full potential right now. And Riddle and Keith Lee, they've still got time. They're still building their foundations. They're still kind of in their paying their dues portion of their career, and neither one I don't think is realistic to even come close to winning the championship. So AJ Styles at least is a fighting chance. You could kind of make an argument type of reasoning. So what else is happening? Lana, again, seems to be the focal point of Raw here and there. They've done a lot of, or tried to have done a lot of damage repair with her character from the disaster that was most of 2020 for Lana, with Bobby Lashley and everything else, and the love triangle with Liv Morgan that wasn't. It was bizarre. And I think they're doing damage control by really humbling her and her being berated and being told you can't do this or that. You stand here. I'm not a fan of that, but I know what they're trying to do with Lana. And I will say this, they've at least accomplished this for me personally. I at least don't want to change the channel when I see it, because I'm interested in seeing her either A, go through a table, or B, finally snap and show us the fire that we know is there. That is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the fire from Lana. I'm not looking for the shy, just kind of, you know, punching bag Lana, which is what she is right now. She is the punching bag of the brand, and she needs to stop that. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with her. I can't believe I'm saying that. I'm still not ready for her to be women's champion, but at least it's a story that is unique. We haven't had that in a while. Certainly not in quite a while, but I think that pretty much does it for me, guys. I don't want to go into too much to Monday Night Raw, but because you can listen to my full review. If you guys like us, please tell a friend or give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. It does help us out. We are on every podcast app you can imagine. Spreaker, Spotify, Stitcher, really radio.com, everywhere that you can imagine. So tell a friend, and I do appreciate that very much. And on Tuesday, we'll be back with a Monday Night Raw review. And then Wednesday, may or may not do a live show. We shall see. Depending on how things go. Maybe Monday Night Raw is explosive. Maybe it's not. We have Randy Orton on A Moment of Bliss. That is, I guess, advertised for Monday night. So I think that is a big setup for The Fiend, as we all see coming. And I think that's it for the preview of Raw. But Certainly, guys, if you wanted to have me do a live show, I'm here for you. You can send me an email, realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Again, you can also send us a voicemail at the number I gave you earlier. And that pretty much wraps it up. And you guys know the schedule rest of the week. We pump like 8 shows out a week, sometimes more, especially if it's a pay-per-view week. We've got a lot of content, and hopefully you guys are enjoying it. I know that I am. And then we will continue to be here on a weekly basis. So with all that said, guys, I hope you enjoy your day. I'll talk to you next time.